the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, flagship RIP number 72, Len. Can you believe it? 72 times we've done this show. We're about to hit number 72. Today, I told my wife she couldn't run the dryer until we were done the podcast because it's in the room next to me here and I think it's too loud. What's the wildest thing you've told your wife she couldn't do because you were doing the show?
Nothing. Everything is fair game in the Len household here. So nothing's going to be stopping her from doing whatever she needs to get done to make things operate. So yeah, nothing. I'm not sure why you're not plugging in an S9 to your dryer and stack sats at the same time of drying your clothes. I think that's probably the best course of action for you, Joey.
Dan Snyder of Kaboom Racks would probably agree with you. Okay, so Len, we are sponsored by two great companies. We're going to talk about sponsors and we'll talk about some of the housekeeping stuff. And then we got a little treat for people who are watching on YouTube. I think they're really going to enjoy. So obviously the first sponsor is ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy Bitcoin. And of course the other token, which we don't often talk about or deal with on this program. But if you do, hey, that's up to you. You can buy it there as well. They got four things going on. ShakePay, you can spend off your CAD balance, have the whole purchase comped in Satoshis. Outstanding. They got the shaking sats. If you use our promo code, CharlieBetaPeter, to sign up, you can shake your phone every day up to day 365. You'll get incremental steps all the way up to 1,000 Satoshis after a year and then 1,000 Satoshis a day after that. You cannot beat that as a faucet for Bitcoin. They also have the cash back or sats back Visa card. So you add it to your Apple Pay or Google Pay. On your first $5,000 spent, it's 2% back on Satoshis. And everything after that is 1%, which is pretty good. And then they added recently the shaking squads, you and four friends or you and four people you don't know or you and four people you haven't met or maybe met once at a meetup or maybe you don't know them at all from Twitter or something. I don't know. You guys all join up. You start a team, name it, put an emoji after it if you want. And then every time one of you spends on your CAD balance, the whole team gets 42 sats. And there's no cap on that line. You can spend as many times as you want in a day and they just keep flooding you with sats. So ShakePay, great Canadian company. We used them before they sponsored us. We use them even more now. We hope you give them a shot too.
And what are you going to do with all the Satoshis and Bitcoin that you get from ShakePay? Well, why not put it on the Ledin platform? And they're our second sponsor of our show. And if you open up an account with our referral code below and you fund your Ledin account with at least 75 USDC or 150,000 Satoshis, keep that on their platform for 15 consecutive days and Ledin will reward you with 10 USDC. And if you're in a need of money and you don't want to sell your large stack of Bitcoin, Ledin is there to help you out where you could borrow against your Bitcoin, 50% loan to value. You're good to go. They give you the money and you're good to do whatever you need to do. Change your tires, buy new tires, fill up your car, whatever the heck you need to do. Also with B2X, if you're feeling lucky, you could double up your Bitcoin stack. So if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up and you time it right with B2X, well, when the price goes up significantly, you pull out, you're good to go. And now you have some more Bitcoin simply by using Ledin's B2X option and timing the market correctly. And the last thing they have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. And this is an industry first, but not available everywhere. So make sure you check their website to see where that's being offered, but also check the website to see what is the savings and borrowing rates. One other thing, Joey, just want to make mention that this show is part
of... I forgot. I knew you were going to say it. This show is part of the CBP Media Network, which will have some other programs coming in short order, maybe once our summer schedules kind of slow down here. So yeah, Len, sorry. I know we just talked about that 30 seconds before we got on.
I like Ricky saying that I'm trying to encourage people to take care of their cars. Yeah, change your oil, change the fluids, make sure the tires are rotated and there's sufficient tread on there so you're good to go because those cars are getting more expensive by the day. I don't know why, so you better take care of those fuckers. So, Joey, there's lots to talk about at the start of the show, though. I just want to make note that Podcasting 2.0, lately we've been giving to Bitcoin Smiles, and we're going to be doing so for the next less than 24 hours. So everything that has been donated to us within the last six, 7 days, we're going to send over to Bitcoin Smiles. And that's a organization that is providing dental care to people that are in El Salvador that just don't have means to pay for their dental care. But moving forward, for the next 7 days, at the very least, we're going to be donating to a new cause called Bitcoin Ikasi. I hope I pronounced this correctly. They're building a Bitcoin community in a South African town, and they plan to build a Bitcoin economy. Hopefully, it's going to be circular economy with Bitcoin being used, and they're going to be using Lightning to make this all happen. So if you're going to be donating to us, it's going to be going over to Bitcoin Ikasi. Again, I apologize if I didn't pronounce that correctly, but that's where our sats, that your sats that are donated to us, will be going to for the next little while. So hopefully everybody's okay with that.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Okay, Len, should we, I guess, make note here that this is the first time we're going to try this new format for the show with some new media that we've procured from our friends at Fiverr. Some guy in God knows what country or God knows what locale put together for us a short clip that we're going to use on the YouTube side of things. I don't know what we're going to do about the audio. Should I cut out that clip on the audio or no?
Let it go for now, but there's still two more things we have to chop off.
Okay, yeah, list. Come on, keep going.
Price of Bitcoin, we'll knock that one off. And in Canadian dollars, it's 30,626. So we're above the 30,000 threshold in Canadian dollars.
Yeah, dollars no one cares about. And the dollars everyone cares about, 23,815 US.
And people that do send us boosts through Fountain with comments, I thank you very much. I can't reply back. We can't reply back. So I'm going to be reading just a few of the funny ones that we've been receiving for the past little while. And I just want to say thank you to everybody that's been sending these to us. So Crypto Beard says, one of my favorite podcasts. Thanks for the great comment. Let's see. There's a few of them here, Julian, and one from a particular user you're going to laugh at. Another one writes, appreciate the discussion with Jeff's vision as it, with regards to Jeff Booth to build a better future for our children. This is from user 529, a bunch of numbers. So it's a very random name here. Norman Remnant says, here's some of the best property the world has ever seen. Take my sats. Thank you, Norman, for that. And that's going to Bitcoin Smiles for the next little while. Bless Allah 786 says, next initiative to donate to is Bitcoin Ikasi from South Africa. Thank you for the suggestion, because that's who we're going to be sending it to next. And we have one more comment. I'm just going to scroll down, Joey. Just give me a moment here. Joey's Achilles quote sent a comment here. Be like HODL D, sell all your stocks and buy a Bitcoin miner. Don't be like Joey and buy Coinbase stock.
It's funny. There's a Joey's Achilles Twitter account now, which either means that like stalkers are NGU, or that we have the best fans in the world, or who are, you know, paying enough attention that they know that not only did I have that injury, but also that it's become a running joke on the show. So there you go.
Okay. So with that, I have nothing else to chop off our list of things to do. So if you want to just go right to the video, let's do it.
Let's run the video. Enjoy. Amazing. I can't believe you chose the trap drums. And you're like, what, you don't like the drums? Like the drums at anticipation. No, man, I was hyped you chose the trap drums. I'm a big trap drums guy. So nice.
A man of many surprises. So with that being all done, Joey, let's just go right at it. And let's talk about the economy. We talk about this stupid thing on a weekly basis. Let's do our update. You see, we have another week of economic talk, different stories, more stats, but ultimately the same conclusion. But I just got to say one thing before we really dive into this. Nancy Pelosi visiting Taiwan. There's a lot of fears right now. This may have strained the U.S.-China relationship. So this is going to cause some problems moving forward. And she's got a set of nuts to go to Taiwan. I have to give her kudos for going there, because I would have never expected her or anybody else to do that, given the climate we're in.
Don't you think that after she said she was going, no matter what China said, she had to go? Though we talked about this last week, don't you think that had to happen once she said she was going? They must have done that calculation, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree, but still, in the end, there's a little bit of fear something may happen while she was there, but also retaliation of her just going there. I just have to give kudos to her for going. It's I don't often give her credit for stuff, but this one I am, because this in my eyes, it's a ballsy move, and you got to have a set of nuts to do it. And she did it. Good for her. So, yeah, let's move on and talk about the economy. Now, I'm going to break this down into three parts, and I'll talk about employment, debt, and the rest. And for the employment, I'll be relatively brief here. And number one, it's generally assumed that insurance companies are recession-proof, but Geico is one of these big companies. But they just announced not too long ago, this past week, they are going to be shuttering a lot of their offices, 38 in the state of California. And it's due to result of the downward pressures that's going on there. And hundreds and hundreds of employees are going to be laid off. When an insurance company closes shop in a state, that's a telling sign. We also had a report that there was a lot of people hired this past month in July. And a lot of people are saying, yeah, this is great news. Reuters, in fact, they say the U.S. employers hired far more workers than expected in July, with the unemployment rate falling to pre-pandemic low of 3.5%, providing the strongest evidence yet that the economy was not in a recession. Reuters, you are just fucking stupid. How many of these jobs are simply needed, their second jobs, and needed to feed people's keep food on the plate and feed their family? It's like people are finding second jobs. How many of these are older people coming back into the workforce because they were fucking wiped out because of inflation killing their savings, the stock market wrecking whatever they had put in there? So this is not reflective of things going down. In fact, I could add a little bit of color to the jobs numbers. Full-time jobs down 71,000. Part-time jobs up 384,000. Multiple jobs up 92,000. Those three stats are not indicative of a strong economy. Part-time jobs don't make the economy work. That's it for the stuff about employment. I want to move on to debt. And this will be a little bit more in depth. Number one, household debt now stands at $16 trillion. And this is the highest debt for household debt ever recorded in U.S. history. And for the last quarter, in fact, it went up $312 billion, or this is roughly the size of Colombia's annual GDP, and that's up only in one quarter. Mortgage balances are up 1.7% for the quarter, and now totals $11.4 trillion. Credit cards, this is a real mess. They're up 13% over the past year, and this is the fastest gain since 2000. A report from CNBC reveals that 58% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck, including 30% of those making over $250,000. And this stat comes up often, and it's revised so every so often, but this is the latest I could find. One thing is for certain, every revision is showing this is trending in the wrong directions. I know that the numbers are slightly misleading, as you talked about in a previous episode, Joey, but still this highlights the debt load that people are carrying is getting heavier and heavier by the day, and it's more costly to service debt. Car markets. I got some numbers on that too. And I'm going to break this down into five parts. Number one, vehicle debt is now at a record $1.5 trillion. It's a lot of fucking Teslas. So this equates to about 10% of all the consumer debt that is just tied directly to the car market. Cars are consumables. They don't generally increase in price in normal markets, in regular times. But this makes me wonder if people are just living beyond their means and purchasing more expensive cars. Three, used cars payments are up 20% in the last 2 years, 20% up in 2 years. This is directly in line with the new added liquidity in the market being circulated. And there's an increase of the cost of desirable goods and used cars being one of them. Four, the average used cars are up $10,000 above fair value. Again, this is tied to the added liquidity floating around. And it's also tied to manufacturers having problems with adding new cars to the market and shortages in everything. So this is part and parcel of that. And the fifth thing, this is the most telling sign here. One in 12 Americans are 90 days late on their car payment.
Huge. That's a big stat.
Yeah, this is the most telling sign. This is a bubble that is just willing to or ready to burst. And it's a $1.5 trillion budget, a bubble at that. Let's talk Gen Zers now. And this is people that are born between 1997 and 2012. 29% of those people living between ages 18 and 25, they're living at home with parents or other relatives. And the rationale is because the cost of living is too high. I understand. I agree with them. We have failed the next generation, the first time ever we've done so in well over a century. U.S. credit, consumer credit increased by a total of $40.15 billion only in the month of June. $40 billion in 1 month. This number comes in way higher than expected of $25 billion. To put it in perspective, that's a high $15 billion higher. That's roughly the same price Pelosi probably was paid for going to the Southeast Asian countries for her trip. U.S. residents did something incredible between April and June. They collectively opened up 233 million new credit card accounts. Some may say this is good. There's some, you know, legitimate reasons. Perhaps there's some new businesses that needed new credit cards. Perhaps people are closing off old credit cards with crappy terms and getting favorable ones and opening those ones up. I agree with maybe those are pretty good, but not all of them. 233 million is a lot. In fact, there's only 260 million people in the U.S. that are over the age of 18. So that's almost a one-to-one ratio of a person over the age of 18 that opened up a credit card account between April and June. I'm going to go to the rest of this stuff. We have 7.6 of all home sales. They have reduced their asking price in the last 4 weeks. And that's the highest amount of reduction in the last 20 years, as per Redfin. Sales of new homes dropped 11% in 1 month, second largest decline in 50 years. We talk so much about homes. Let's talk even about video games. Now, this is a market segment we never talk about. But the products in there, the sales, they've fallen by 1.78% in quarter two. This is down 13% year over year. This is not a small sector of the economy, because last quarter, $12.3 billion was spent in it. So it's not an insignificant amount, but it's taking a turn for the worse. Do people have less money? Do people have less time? Combination of the two? I don't know. Even Berkshire Hathaway, they fucking posted a massive $43 billion loss as per Reuters. This is unsustainable. And with all the talk and power we have, people talking about climate change and all the policies that they're imposing on us to cause prices of energy to go up, a poll was done recently, and only 1% of voters think that climate change is the most important story. The poll outlines that people are more worried about putting food on the plates and feeding their families than dealing with shit like climate change. It shows me that the policymakers, they're out of touch with reality. They're pushing an agenda, and rather than listening to our concerns, they just keep pushing out shit that they want to see done. Men can get pregnant. Inflation is transitory. Two quarters of negative GDP is not a recession. And people say that they're going to start spending more money as a way to bring down inflation. What a fucking time we live in, Joey. I have to say one last thing before I go. And this is a quote I read on Twitter. I wish I could reference who said it, but I don't have it, the exact person that tweeted it out. Anyways, it says that the Fed is no longer the buyer of last resort. It is now the seller of last resort. This is the time we live in.
It's good that you mentioned a lot of those numbers. I have a bunch of that stuff here as well. Specifically that like 233 million new credit card accounts in Q2. One thing you didn't mention there, I don't think you mentioned it. You know what? So that's the most over the last little while. Do you know what it's just behind in terms of another quarter where that many accounts were open?
You mean another quarter that was kind of close to the 233?
Yeah.
Was it March to June of 2020?
It's 2008.
So
another sort of canary in the coal mine stat, right? Like, we've seen this before. You know, history's not quite repeating, but it is rhyming in a lot of ways. And that jives with, you know, the Visa and MasterCard earnings calls where, you know, I get why Visa and MasterCard are doing this, because obviously they have to make money for their shareholders. But this idea that, you know, there isn't a drop in consumer spending and that reflects economic strength, what it reflects, it sounds like to both of us, is that there's structural issues in consumer balance sheets. Debt, like you mentioned, is ripping, and cash and savings, you know, given that the spending on Visa and MasterCards are staying the same and there's, you know, a trillion new accounts opening, presumably that the debt and savings are dropping. I have some good info here on Canada's situation from Ritesh Jain. I'm not sure how to say your name, Mr. Jain, but he is going to come on the show in late August. I talked to him today. He's the co-founder of Pine Tree Macro. I'm going to read the tweet verbatim because it's not fair if I don't read the tweet verbatim. One more interesting data on Canazuela. Great name. Canada created and has celebrated, by the way, as you mentioned, the sort of jobs numbers in the States being celebrated. We've celebrated ours here as well. Canada created 450,000 jobs between February 20th and June 2022. Out of those, Len, what percentage of those jobs were created in the public sector, you think?
More than 30%.
92%.
Oh, that's 8%, a sustainable number.
8% in the private sector, and small businesses lost on net jobs during that same period.
Repeat the number. Just want it to everybody to take this
out of 450,000 jobs created in Canada between February 2020 and June 2022. 92% were created in the public sector, 8% in the private sector, and small businesses, whatever that subsection is. Some threshold for either employees or for total revenue, lost net jobs during that period. How's that? How's that feel? How's that taste? That's big trouble. That is huge trouble. Most inverted yield curve in the G7 right now is the Canadian curve, which is, you know, you can look this up. It basically means that you're not getting paid for duration risk on bonds because no one wants to buy long-term bonds. Like they just can't, you know, like it tells you that the bond market is saying the Bank of Canada is causing problems that are going to be detrimental, like significantly so to the Canadian economy. Very interesting stuff, man. And when you hear those jobs numbers, you can kind of see why. Here's another great stat for you as far as debt. You talked about consumer debt and you've talked about some other, you know, government debt as well. In the first 148 years of Canada's existence, now I realize this is like an eye-catching stat, but maybe doesn't hold as much weight on the data side, but I think it's something worth talking about all the same. First 148 years, up until the end of the Harper regime, $634.4 billion in debt, okay? In the last 7 years, we've topped it at $659.1 billion added. Now, I know that takes into account a lot of stuff, inflation, COVID, whatever, but the fact of the matter is, whatever you want to blame it on, whether it's any number of those things or policy or whatever, or demographics that required additional spending. The fact of the matter is the thing you can't escape no matter what the cause is the consequences, which is something that seems to be lost on a lot of first world governments, unfortunately. In the US, as you mentioned, the non-farm jobs number had everyone hyped up in the blue check media, right? As I always call them, the state stenographers were out in full force there repping for Brandon and the team. But like you mentioned, multiple jobs, like people getting second jobs, 92,000 part-time plus 384, full-time down 71K. Now, what I wish I would have done when I was researching this is look at how many of those jobs are public sector. Like what's that number? If the number is even 50,000, it's a disaster. It's a disaster. But we'll have to find that out. Or if someone in the audience knows, we can talk about that maybe after the show. Our boy, Peter Ducey and KGP, Karine Jean-Pierre, had a great exchange in the White House press room the other day about KJP saying that, you know, the Biden team was doing right by Americans by lowering the cost of gas by about 70 cents or something like that, a liter-ish, I forget, or a gallon, I should say. And Ducey's basically going, look, it's still about $2, you know, 100% more than it was when he took office. How can you call this a win? And Karine Jean-Pierre goes tete-a-tete with them for a bit until finally, like she always does, she utters something stupid that she shouldn't have said. And in this case, it was that Ducey needs to understand how important that 85 cents per month per family member is when thinking about how successful the Biden policy is on gas. There's another number I could repeat. How important 85 cents per family member per gallon is, or per family member per month is, when thinking about lower energy costs for American families. This is in line, of course, with the tweet they sent out last year about saving 16 cents on your summer barbecue and all this other kind of nonsense. Like if you have two cars, you save this much. You know, presumably, Len, if me and you bought 100 cars each, we could save even more money. But that's a story for another time. Yeah. But that, I've been actually thinking about that in the next time I go shopping for like sale meat or something. I'm not sure. U.S. also just passed a $700 billion Inflation Reduction Act bill. Did you talk about that? Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff, isn't it? Now, I looked at this bill, you know, in some detail, not a lot of detail, obviously, because who's got the time to read 50,000 pages about $700 billion worth of pork spending? But the stuff I did see was a little bit troubling. And I pulled some info, you know, via tweets here from some people I find reliable, QTR and others among them. Interesting stuff, okay? This is, first of all, I would say, you know, the KJP thing about gas and also the $700 billion inflation protection bill, these are not things done by competent people. And I think also it's fair to say they're not things done by people who are shepherding in a booming recovery that I keep hearing about, the best recovery of all time. This stuff doesn't jive, okay? I don't know if you looked at the bill then, but gives tons of money to GM and Ford, something like 250 or to 280 million of corporate, you know, corporate sort of handouts, incentives, things like that. The way you really know, though, that the bill is not going to do what it says it's going to do for inflation is you have MMT enthusiast and money printing connoisseur Bernie Sanders standing up in the chambers and saying like, hey, this is garbage. It's not going to do anything to have, you know, it's not going to impact inflation at all. This is not going to work in the slightest the way that these guys say it's going to work. And also Biden, you'll remember, I think it was in between him missing hand cues for where to turn on the White House lawn and licking an ice cream cone during the campaign. He mentioned that he was not going to raise taxes on anyone that made over $400,000. Well, in the bill, you can actually see where the increases come. And there is increases under the new legislation for those earning less than $10,000, those earning between $20,000 and $30,000, $30,000 and $40,000, $40,000 and $50,000, $50,000 and $60,000, $60,000 and $70,000, $75,000 and $100,000, $100,000 to $200,000, $200,000 to $500,000, $500,000 to $1,000,000, and $1,000,000+. They all see increases, every single one of them, in year one. Okay, so it's not like it's going to be prolonged, and after the recovery, the tax rate will increase for these middle class, and of course, there's, you know, upper and high income earning families there as well. But you know, most of the tranches I just spoke about, those are small. Those are small families, right? People earning $100,000 a year as a family, or $75,000 a year as a family, they're all going to get hit. And actually, it goes up even in the year 2025. So that's the 2023 calendar year. In the 2025 calendar year, it's the same thing. There's increases for the $10,000 tranche. There's an increase in the $30,000 to $40,000 tranche. There's an increase in the $100,000 to $200,000 tranche, all these things. Now, you may be saying to yourself, listener and viewer, that, well, there's not a lot of families who make $100,000 to $200,000 because if there was, you know, we'd be having more tax receipts. There wouldn't be these problems we're seeing with inflation, blah, blah, blah. Let me posit to you, as I've done in the past, that the squeeze on taxes is coming from both ends. Inflation feels good at the beginning because your income's going up, your TFSA looks better, blah, blah, blah. Or if you're in the States, your 401k, your IRA, your Roth IRA. But if you're being squeezed on the tax side from the top down, and your income is going up because of inflation, not in real terms, or not in spending power terms, but rather in dollar terms, your salary is going up and your earnings are going up, you're going to get pinched on both ends. Eventually, that clamp is going to make it to your tranche of the tranches I just mentioned. And this is, you know, Len, also not taking into account that the new business taxes that are coming down the pipe, where, as we've talked about before, anyone worth their salt in economics, and there ain't many of them these days, unfortunately, most of them are NIMs on Twitter, but the people worth their salt in economics, you know, can identify for you pretty quickly that the true meaning of trickle-down economics is not, you know, what's described in textbooks, but rather, if taxes get levied on businesses, they will eventually be levied via cost or fees or service decreases or whatever to consumers and the middle class and the low. Like, this is not that hard to figure out. No one is going to eat these costs except you and me on businesses. Biden tweeted the other day, it's almost unbelievable. Again, like, file this under disappointing but not surprising. The Inflation Reduction Act will reduce the deficit by $300 billion and will do it without raising taxes a penny on those making less than $400,000 a year. Does he think no one read the bill? Maybe his people didn't read the bill. Maybe people voting on it didn't read the bill, but I fucking read enough that I know that. And that, by the way, that chart, which I'm happy to share with people, is from the finance.gov website. It's not like some NIM on Twitter put that together. It's on the website. All you have to do is go look, but no one goes to look, okay? Worth noting as well that you'll remember a couple of weeks ago, Biden gets on TV, and he's done this many times. Same with Corinne Jean-Pierre and these other lackeys, you know, presumably paid handsomely by the White House to utter this nonsense to uninformed and unintelligent people over and over again ad infinitum. He gets on TV and says, the oil companies in this environment are making more money than God. They're profiteering, basically, is what he says, okay? first of all, that's ridiculous. Everyone who knows about refining knows that you can't invest, you know, in a 10-year project when every single government policy is basically demanding you hang yourself, you know, and fall on your sword in the name of ESG. So obviously oil companies are not going to do that. It's not that hard to figure this out. But that aside, he's talking about how they make more money than God and they need to be taxed heavily because of this, because it's not fair. Exxon net income, $17.9 billion. Do you know whose net income was $19.4 billion same period?
Let me know.
Apple. So Apple makes more money. This is a zero hedge tweet. Great zero hedge tweet. Apple made more money than the company that makes more money than God. Is it time for a special tax on Apple too? Of course not. It's ridiculous, right? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Everywhere you look, Len, I'll just finish with this. Everywhere you look, there's incompetent people at the helm. And there's no other way to put, like, there's no more generous term than incompetent, because the other ones are about corruption and you know, things of this nature that no one can prove. But Len, like we said this before, these actions are like indistinguishable from people who are trying to intentionally crash your ship. And I think, you know, if there's ever a time for people to consider alternative assets, Bitcoin specifically, obviously, if you're listening to this show, this is it. This is the time to think about, you know, where you can park your money to protect it from policy decisions like we've talked about tonight and like we talk about every week. Honestly, it's amazing to me, Len, that like every week we have half an hour on 7 days worth of poor policy in the modern world. It's an unbelievable well that we can keep going back to for weeks and weeks and weeks now, almost 2 years. Crazy stuff.
Did you read the Inflation Reduction Act? Because I didn't
read all of it. There's a lot of Medicare stuff, ESG stuff in there. But like, come on. I mean, that tax thing is enough for me to call bullshit on the rest of it, honestly. Period.
Is it really? Because I saw it and I saw it was 725 pages or something along those lines. Is that the one that is floating around, or am I looking at a reduced version?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. So, I'd have to go back to the finance website and have a look and see exactly where where the total page count falls. I wish I'd saved the tweet. I didn't save the tweet. I just have screenshots here of the tables. But yeah. So it's from the Joint Committee on Taxation, July 29, 2022. So yeah, this is it. The bill, if you look up distributional effects on Title I, July 29, 2022 on Google, I bet you'll find the PDF. Can't be that hard to find. It's on, like I said, it's on the official US government website. So you can filter the links that way.
So if the one that I found is correct and was like around 725 pages or so, that equates to $1 billion per page, because the bill itself is going to be $740 billion.
So that great or what?
Put things in perspective. That's a very expensive page, each one, for that act. So very, yeah, they're going to spend their way out of this, and it's going to cost everybody less money in the end. If I don't know. We live in very difficult times.
It's incredible, man. Like, and like, listen, I don't want to harp on this again because it fucking feels like I do it every week. But like, the one thing you can do to combat this in your own life is like tell your friends, like, hey, look, here's the nature of the bill. You know, this is what the president said. Here's what's in the bill. It's on the website. Like, have a look. Okay, see what you think. And then start to poke holes. Like, hey, look, man, if they'll lie to you about this, you know, they might just lie to you about something else too. And that's the thing I think a lot of people who are, you know, loyalists for their political party of choice are missing. And it's on the right as well. It's not just on the left, but, you know, the left is the governing party. And so obviously that's the pinata that's hanging right now. So that's where we're going to spend most of our time.
Do you think they're going to be having those IRS agents do other things besides reviewing?
This is the other thing. I didn't even bring this up because I don't almost want to go down this rabbit hole because it just pisses me off. But like the IRS now, do you think they're bringing on, this is what, don't forget, okay? The same people of the same party who will tell you that it's 1,000 people and 100 companies that are evading all the taxes and you know, ruining America for the average person, right? They're destroying the dream of the white picket fence and the you know, terrier mix with the two kids in the front yard. Do you think that the IRS has such poor production outputs as far as the per employee audit results, you know, adding to the tax revenues, that for that 1,000 people and 100 companies, they had to bring on, what was the number? 60,000 more staff?
It was between 60 and 80,000 new.
They got to bring on, or do you think given what you know about the other stuff that they've lied about? Or do you think that those people who presumably are going to be generally unskilled as IRS people, like if there's 80,000 competent accounting people out there just waiting to audit millionaires and the mega rich, like they're not fucking working for the IRS. These are unskilled people. These people are not going to be auditing Amazon and Apple. They're going to be auditing Len and Joey. Like that's where they're going to go. The IRS is not in the business of hiring 80,000 unskilled people off the fucking street to do this work against companies that have, as the president himself says, more money than God. It's not that hard to figure this out. The problem is, for some reason, like I said, the loyalists on both sides just cannot see through the banner and, you know, into the absurdity of these policy positions, these talking points, these spending bills. And so what you end up with is what we got now. You and me bullshitting again in the basement about stuff that we can't do anything about except buy Bitcoin, which, by the way, you know, I tweeted this the other day, and this IRS thing is a great example. You're not going to realize that the state is using drastic measures to eliminate your freedoms, specifically the freedom of your capital, until it's too late. And you're watching it happen in real time. That 80,000 people, that's an example of a policy that's going to, you know, really be detrimental on the freedom of wealth movement that you have as a citizen. It's coming. If you don't own Bitcoin by now, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I mean, you must, if you're listening to the show, you must be at least, you know, BTC curious. But generally speaking, I think now, if you don't own it, like, you're almost beyond help at this point. Are you not? What is the positive spin? Even Bernie fucking Sanders thinks the bill is insane. That guy will print money for anything and everything. Okay. But even he thinks this is nuts. What does that tell you? Like, they're lost, man. They are lost at the moment.
Did you see that they have also attacked, I think it's called Tornado Cash, and that is for to hide the tracks. And it makes me wonder if they're going to be trying to tax some of the people that have been moving and bought into some of these digital assets, and trying to hide your tracks is going to be a big no-no moving forward. I'm not sure what they're doing to stop it, but I know that something came out just today to say that they're going to be
They shut down that service.
Shut it down?
Yeah, GitHub either as a TOS violation, removed the accounts of the people who contributed to Tornado Cash, or worse, at the behest of the government, removed the accounts that were related to Tornado Cash. And there's a lot of commentary about that. I don't know enough about it. It's really recent, and I had a busy ass day today, but I would like to find out more, because even though that's an Ethereum product, you're right. The you know, similarities between something like that and something like CoinJoin, Lightning. Listen, there's been bigger reaches that have been successful by deleterious governments looking to control capital, and this one would not be that surprising if there was an attempt made.
We'll see how far they're gonna go.
Yeah,
and that's it for the A block, Joey. Let's just transition to the Canadian news. And Canada also announced the job numbers for the month of July, and they weren't all that good. In June, I know I'm going back another month here, we reported that we lost 43,000 jobs for the month of June. July was slightly better, but still not great. We lost 30,000 jobs in the month of July. And forecasts were showing that there was going to be 15,000 jobs created. So they were totally off with the actual reality of things. The jobless rate stays firm at the all-time low at 4.9%. Now, keep in mind, we lost around 73,000 jobs in the past 2 months. And still, the jobless rate remains at all-time low at 4.9%. There's some number fudging going on. In fact, why is this number staying so low? Well, it's because there are fewer and fewer jobs out there, and there's less people actually looking and actively looking for jobs. So less people actively looking for jobs, and they're not working. They're no longer considered unemployed. And so the unemployment number comes down. And as of the end of July, there's about 1 million people officially classified as unemployed. And there's about 19 million, almost 20 million people working. So that's a huge disparity. But of those 1 million people, that's a lot of people that still need to find jobs. And unfortunately, they're having trouble doing so. You know what, Joey? They keep talking about unemployment. We are at an all-time low. And things are looking rosy, but it's just a numbers game. They're moving shit from one pile to another. And so rather showing up in higher unemployment numbers, they're showing up in the labor force participation going lower as well. So you're moving from one pile of shit to another. But in the end, ultimately, there's less people working and there's less people able to find jobs. And there's less people actually actively looking to find jobs. Why are they just destitute? Are they just hopeless? Are they just had enough? I fucking don't know. But this is not something that a strong economy should be reporting. This is something that a weak economy is going to report month over month. August is going to be another month. I suspect we're going to have a net loss for jobs. When are they going to say, then fuck, we should start doing something? I don't know.
Well, they're already doing it. Look at all the public sector jobs. How much more can they do? Like, they can't do how many more public sector jobs can they do? First of all, that's a whole, we talked about that. I don't want to go down that road again. I do want to talk about data obfuscation though. What can you just give me like three or four of the terms you just used in that story? Like you had a couple there, right? You had, you go ahead. What are the terms that the government
labor force participation?
Okay. So that's a bullshit term. What the fuck is labor force participation? Why don't they just fucking say people who are working? What is labor force participation is bullshit because it's the easiest way to force people to think twice about whether or not, are people participating? What does it mean to participate? What's a long-term unemployed? 27 months, 36 months, 24 months? Who knows? Is it two quarters? Is it four quarters? No one knows. These sorts of obfuscationary terms, like that cannot be a word. I don't know if it is or not, but if it is, I'll be shocked. These obfuscationary terms, obfuscationist terms, these obfuscationistas at the government, okay? They're constantly making shit up to drive people away from looking at the data. Like that term to most people, when they see that, they're like, oh, the jobs numbers are steady, right? The unemployment rate remain the same, even though it's a net negative in jobs, even though it's net negative in earnings, even though it's net negative in full-time, in working hours, in wage per hour, all this stuff, right? And instead of people being able to just identify very clearly and then putting on like a chart, Jesus Christ, like if I'm doing a slide deck for work, like there better be some fucking charts there. It can't just be bullshit numbers and tables over and over again because no one's going to want to look. Everyone knows this about data presentation. These numbers are important. And so intentionally, there is no visual aid for the data. There's never a visual aid for the data. Instead, it's terms that don't make any sense, terms that obfuscate, all this garbage. I am so sick of it, man. I'm so sick of it. This is why, okay? I was thinking about this today. This is no shot at you, certainly no shot at the listeners and viewers. But I can't fucking wait to not do this show next week. I need a fucking break.
What?
I need to suck beers back on the dock and just think about other things besides obfuscationistas. We got to print these shirts. Obfuscationistas. I know. We gotta print these out. Anyway, like I'm just so sick of it. It's everywhere, man. It's fucking everywhere. It blows me away that more people are not frustrated by this. And I think honestly that there's going to be some threshold in the not too distant future where, you know, if 15% of people are going, hey, wait a minute, these numbers are bullshit. That's enough that at every lunch table at work, there's someone talking about it. That's enough that at every dinner table, there's someone talking about it. At Thanksgiving, there's someone talking about it. Christmas, whatever, right? That's where we need to get to. And I hope that this show acts as a node for those 15%. I want to be one of the shows that people can say, hey, I listened to these two jokers on Monday nights. They're making points that we should be talking about this. And here's why we should be talking about it. Here's what it means. Here's where the data is skewed. Here's where the fudging happens. Here's why they do it. We need to do this. And so I hope people take this seriously and take it to their families and their friends and go, hey, not everything is as rosy as you think. And you're not imagining that things are more expensive. You're not imagining life's getting harder. None of this stuff is in your mind. It's all very real. And the powers that be do not want you to believe your lying eyes, as they say.
Another thing that they're not talking about is insolvency. And in Ontario, the consumer insolvency number is slowly creeping up. Ontario recorded about 8,817 insolvency filings in Q2 2022. And these numbers are up quite a bit from the previous quarter as well as from last year. So from last quarter, they're up 12.8%. And for the year, year over year, they're up 16.5%. A lot more people are insolvent, or at least insolvency numbers are going up. This is in line to what we were talking about earlier with a lot of credit cards going out there. Those credit cards, I'm sure, they're going out to younger people, and I'll talk about that later on in the show. And there's going to be a lot of debt that's going to be accumulated and a lot of debt that's going to be defaulted. This is a very troubling statistic. Who's going to be the bag holders in the end? It's certainly not going to be Visa and MasterCard or the chartered banks. It's going to be the taxpayers. So be ready. There's going to be some real problems moving forward, and they're going to have to somehow deal with this. More money being printed? Probably. At what expense? Well, our savings and our earning power. It's too bad.
It's everywhere, man. It's everywhere. Like, Len, don't forget, like, as far as like young people and credit cards, I don't want to step on your toes. I don't know what other story you have, but in the US, they still haven't restarted student loan repayments. Okay. So that's like a disaster waiting to happen. Huge disaster. Okay. Other thing is, in Canada, you know, we've been locked down here for so goddamn long that this is going to be the first semester coming in September where kids take on not only the tuition cost, but the residence and living costs of going away to school. And so you get 2 years of backlog debt there that hasn't really been accounted for, hasn't needed to be accounted for in some time. Good luck. Good luck to those kids. Good luck to their parents. Good luck to the small businesses they can't support in those university towns. Good luck to everybody, okay? Because you're going to need it. There's not enough horseshoes in the world to save you from what's coming in the next 18 months. That's really what I believe. And that's why, you know, I see Boomer in the chat talking about, like, you know, orange pilling people at parties. Like, I was talking Bitcoin at the cottage on the weekend. I'll be talking Bitcoin at the cottage this weekend too, I think. Like, I don't see why not. I think that this is the time you can really wake people up, which is a term I hate. It makes you sound like a conspiracy guy, but like, you can really tickle people's brain about where the problems are and how they're not really looking positive on the horizon. You know what I mean? I think these are all important stories, especially tonight. You've been really hitting it out of the park so far. I can't wait to see what's next.
Well, student loans, I'll talk about that really brief, is that they have canceled or delayed the payment of student loans 7 times so far. And the rumor
booming
is
recovery, healthy economy, recovery ever, Jack.
Keep kicking the can down the road. And they're talking about extending it again for an 8th term. So delaying of paying off the student loans ends this month. So they're going to have to make a decision one way or another. If they don't do something, then it starts up September 1st, but it's probably not going to be the case.
Yeah, before the midterm, they're really going to fire it back up. Like, it's so, like, it's fucking insane. The midterm election is going to dictate whether or not $1 trillion in student loans needs to be repaid. How's that? Like, we have completely lost our fucking mind. I mean, not us, we're Canadian, but we have our own problems, I'm sure. But like, over there, come on, man, that's insane. That's completely nuts.
I you know what? I'm going to go on a limb here. I don't think it's totally the midterms that are going to be dictating the student loan thing. They've been doing this far long before the midterms were even in play. I just think that they realize that young people just don't have the ability to pay back the debt that they've accumulated through education. And asking them to start paying it back now, although it's the right thing to do.
Come on, are you playing devil's advocate? Or you really think that?
When
Brandon and Nancy and Chuck, okay, get together, and you know, Paul is there as well. He's serving up the palomas in the Situation Room, okay. And they're talking about whether or not to start up student loan repayments. They got a list of reasons not to start them back up. Where do you think the midterms is on that list? It's number one on the list.
It's number one. But it wasn't there for the previous 7 times. Now I'm trying to say that the previous 7 times wasn't the drive, and there was probably other reasons to do it, and those reasons are probably still prevalent in their decision that they're going to make moving forward. I could be wrong, but I think it's a number,
sir,
of different things.
Come on, sir. Sir.
Sir.
Sir.
I cannot.
We got to go to the next story.
Let's
I'm
going to
fall
it.
Out of my chair. My back's already sore. I can't risk sliding out of the chair again.
So the TREB, T-R-R-E-B, that's the Toronto Regional Real Estate Board, they have recently come out and they're asking for the reinstatement of 40-year amortizations for mortgages, because it's going to help a lot more people get into the homeownership game. But it's just a temporary fix. What this ultimately does is drive up the prices, because you're just adding now more time into the whole equation, and it's not going to change anything. It's not going to add more people, give more people an opportunity to buy in. It's just going to drive up the prices because you're just amortizing this over a longer period of time. This is just such a fiat move, and you know what I mean? Debt creation, and it screams fiat to me, and it's not the right thing to do. I hope they don't do it, but this is not for me to make a decision on. Somebody else is going to, or a bunch of people are going to make this call, and hopefully they make the right one and they don't bring back these 40 mortgages.
They're not going to make the right call. Len, no one has made the right call for 30 fucking years. And by the way, kudos to you and the Karadza brothers, you know, the elder statesmen. The last time we went to visit them, the three of you guys have been around long enough to know, unlike my youthful naivete, that this was coming. You guys called that.
No, it wasn't me.
I thought you guys all said it. They definitely said it. They said it.
No. Yeah. I did not say it. This is, I remember Nick actually was the one that was talking about it, but I'm sure Tom was also in agreement too. But no, this wasn't from me. I didn't have the foresight to see this. No way.
Kudos to them for picking that up. We're going back on that show, I think in like 2 weeks or something. And I can't wait to talk to them about that, because that was really a snipe. They thought it was going to come in a few years, and it sounds like it's going to be here a lot sooner. Because if the story is leaking in the press and the Toronto Real Estate Board is saying it, like, that's not the, you know, Simcoe or Port Colborne or Welland Real Estate Board. That's a pretty big real estate board. That's, you know, some huge chunk of the real estate value in the country. If they want it, then I suspect they have the lobbying power to make it happen. Certainly the votes provincially and federally to make it happen, as far as, you know, dictating the outcome of an election. So I can't wait, man. They nailed that. They fucking nailed that. Good for them.
You were saying it's going to be an election. It's something that, yeah, I think is going to be tangled for during an election. Did you see the price of real estate in some parts of BC? I saw the price in just like from the peak to where we are now. And that's a very short period of time. Some of them was like 40% drops. Yeah. It's insane how much it's gone down.
We talked last week about how there was like I can't remember the region and the neighborhood. Four of the last 9 single family detached homes sold below their tax appraised value, below their MPAC, basically. Yeah. That's unheard of to sell below an MPAC value. MPAC is like the most generous thing the government does for you as far as taxing. when that one goes, you'll know we're really fucked.
That's driven from what I understand, that's driven primarily for what the municipality needs for money. So what they need budget, then they figure, okay, we're going to be taxing this, and that's your
MPAC value. So you're saying it's on the way out? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying the driving factor for MPAC is the budget of the municipality. That's it. No doubt about it. That's just from what I understand. But anyways, moving on. The last Canadian story I have is a very interesting one. Pizza. They're actually getting into monetizing this whole inflation garbage. They are, and I'm not trying to shill them or anything. I just found it so fucking funny. There's a new advertisement that they're doing where you could get a fixed rate pizza, where you could lock in for a year for the price of pizza. And doing it in such a way you just apply for it, but I think it applies to everybody, regardless of if you apply for it or not. So they're pledging to keep the price of their extra large pizza the same for the next year. And it's called, what is it called? The fixed rate pizza. I fucking love it. When pizza companies are now recognizing the price of everything is going up and they're fucking taking advantage of it and making this into an advertisement. We're at the late stage fiat, according to somebody named, Who says that all the time?
NASA says it.
Thank you. Yeah. Just didn't want to say that. So yeah, fixed rate pizza. Check that out. That's fucking funny shit.
I think that is enough for me to invite someone from Pizza Pizza on the program. Like, now we got to talk to them. That is genius.
Isn't it?
If that's marketed well, that is genius. The lock in your price. That is really good. Really good. I am impressed with that marketing department, because that's a quality move. Also, pizza as a general pizza, let's talk about pizza for a sec. I'm going to put my Portnoy hat on here and give a couple of ratings. As far as like pizza goes, late night after the bar pizza, slathered in like barbecue sauce and garlic dip, pizza is a 10 out of 10. If you order pizza when you're anything but inebriated, it's a 5. But if you order it after you're inebriated, it's a 10 every single time. The toppings, there's tons of toppings, always this pretty solid crust, good delivery, good service at the counter. I really miss the days of going to Pizza Pizza after like coming home from Sizzle with the boys. That was those were simpler times, Len. Those were simpler times.
Metro
Sizzle,
Pizza.
Nice Hamilton mention there. If you're from Hamilton or the area, you know Sizzle. If you're not, sorry.
Anyone knows in Northwest Toronto, there's one particular store called Metro Pizza. Back in the day, you used to get a slab for $2.
Oh, it was good.
Best value. So Metro Pizza on Finch, just west of Weston, if I recall correctly. Anyways,
I love it. Lots of good Bitcoin content on this show. Eh? Thanks for tuning in.
So the rest of the news, I'll talk briefly on this, really brief. If you want to go nuts on this, I'm sure you do. You have the floor is yours. Michael Saylor is now no longer the CEO of MicroStrategy. He stepped down, and he says that he will be able to focus more on Bitcoin acquisition strategy and related Bitcoin advocacy initiatives. And he's going to be assuming a new role as the executive chairman. And he will remain on the chairman of the board and the head of investments committee. From what I understand, he is the largest shareholder of MicroStrategy. I'm not exactly sure if that's the case still, but I don't think he gave up his big stack of shares for that company. But it's very interesting that he's kind of following in the same footsteps as Jack Dorsey. Maybe not exactly, but in terms of advocating for more Bitcoin, or at least trying to advocate the Bitcoin initiative, it seems like there's some parallels between the two. But I don't have anything else to say about this. I'm sure you have a lot. So the floor is yours, Joey.
I don't have a lot because I am tired, and I've already given this rant on, you know, lowest common denominator tonight and other times too. But a couple things. I have some experience with C-suites. Like I'm on a board. I know kind of what a C-suite shuffle can look like. This is pretty standard fare as far as C-suite shuffles go. Mike has a couple of things as far as characteristics, both personal and professional, that lend itself to this kind of move. One is obviously his age. I think he's probably entering his, you know, 60s, if I had to guess, if not a little older than that. So you got that. Generally speaking, that's when you take on passion projects. You know, you mentioned Jack Dorsey. I would mention someone like Jeff Bezos, who left Amazon sort of near the top, much the same way Saylor has maybe done with MSTR, not quite as you mentioned, as far as like the shuffle goes, to pursue a passion project, this one being Bitcoin, obviously. I'll mention that a couple of publications, one of them we don't rip as often as we should, one of them we rip all the time, the Wall Street Journal and Bankless, the podcast. Bankless, whose co-hosts cannot bench 135 pounds between the two of them after three reps each, are out there tweeting that Saylor, you know, tweeting shit about there is no second best. Saylor leaves MSTR with a pile of Bitcoin debt, blah, blah, blah. They're stupid. You can't trust anything these guys say. As we know, this is sort of the Gell-Mann amnesia issue. This is the thing that I think most people don't take into account when they think about media, normies, that is, that people who read these things read one article for which they don't know much and assume that everything is accurate and descriptive of the reality, and then scroll to an article or turn the page to an article where they know some inside information, have some primary sourcing, and understand that most of the stuff is wrong, but they can't make the connection. It's very frustrating. That's so Bankless. Wall Street Journal, I think it was Wall Street Journal or New York Times, I forget now, tore into Saylor and said that the board wanted him out, the company wanted him out, he left them with $2 billion in debt. No one even listened to the call. Like, did you listen to the call? I listened to almost the whole call, and the board is all about Bitcoin. The guy who just took over, Fong, all about Bitcoin. The new CFO, so that's a new position for them as far as like an exclusive holder of the spot. I can't remember his name, another Asian-American fella. Very, very sharp guys, I think. That's me, you know, judging them off of, you know, 45 minutes of probably stuff they're prepared for. A lot of Bitcoin questions, obviously. But the board and the company are not getting away from Bitcoin, nor is Saylor, nor is their strategy as far as holding for the long term changing at all. So I think people would be better served ignoring these publications and listening to the conference calls. I'd also note, Len, that you know, you said you didn't listen to this conference call. Are you generally an earnings call guy or no?
No, I get the report after the fact. I don't listen in while it's being done. I get it after.
So could I suggest to you, and to people listening as well, I think that the earnings calls since COVID have become exponentially more accessible for the average investor. And I think that's by design. I think that though these companies are friendly with most of the blue check media, certainly the financial media, they understand that they're better served going straight to the customer, the investor in this case, and doing so through these calls, through Twitter, through YouTube videos, all this stuff. And Saylor and MSCI are not the only ones doing this. Apple does this now, and they've been doing it for a long time with the WWDC and the iPhone releases on YouTube and all that stuff. It's a hype machine, but it's also somewhere where they can go direct to consumer. And the other place you've seen this, Len, is in podcasts. Mike Saylor and all these other CEOs are doing podcasts all the time. I even look at a guy like Jeff Gundlach, who's worth a billion plus. You know, he's got zero Twitter followers, but he tweets all the time about Buffalo Bills training camp, about Buffalo Bills playoff games, and about stuff that Double Line is doing, both on video, on MSNBC, on their own videos and stuff like that, with charts that are, I think, broadly accessible to the intermediate investor. And I consider myself an intermediate investor. I'm sure you do as well. There's a lot of stuff I don't get, but expert. A lot of stuff I yeah, you're an expert. Yeah. Okay. You play on, yeah, you play hardcore on the investing game there.
Every day, if I don't do a call or a put when I do when the market opens,
more it's obfuscation, a lot, by a the way. More obfuscation. Calls and puts. Just call them what they are. You think it's gonna go up or you think it's gonna go down. Anyway, story for another time. Options trading, a whole other rabbit hole. The point I'm trying to make is that during times like these, the silver lining on shitty reporting from blue checks and financial media is that it'll drive more people to earnings calls. And I think once you listen to one earnings call and you find out just how easy it is to process the information, you're going to start tuning into other ones. I don't even look at the reports anymore. I certainly don't turn on MSNBC or CNBC for closing bell during the big tech earnings week, right? To hear about Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, whatever. I don't bother because I get better information from these guys. The Q&A is a lot better than anything MSNBC is going to say because access is at stake there. And you're just going to get better info. I think it's going to drive people to that. And I hope it does. And if you ever have a question, reader or listener, about something you hear on an earnings call, I am 100% happy to try and answer it. I don't know how long it'll take me to answer it, but I'll try my best because it's good for me too to learn something that I don't know if you have a question. So I'm happy to do that if it's about a company that's you know, sort of relevant to the show or relevant to, you know, my portfolio at least. And if it's something that's not, hey, like I'll still try. I think it's good for everyone.
See, when you're talking about how the media is portraying what happened with Saylor, Ricky Tickers talks, it's a purposeful disinformation journalist attack. Now, Joey, I would just like you to share a screen. Go to the private chat. The second tweet.
Which one do you want, woke or Dick Whitman?
The woke one. Breaking news for everybody, including you, Joey. This is actually really interesting stuff. Pull it up.
Someone said this in the all caps. Said this in the chat earlier, by the way, that this was going on.
Really interesting stuff that's going on in the world of politics in the United States. And Joey's going to hopefully share.
Can you see it? Oh, here we go. That's right. I have to add it to the stream. There we go.
What is going on in this world? Can you zoom into that a little bit? Maybe just
make it. Yeah, I think so. How's that?
Yeah.
So I mean, this is obviously not the actual title of the article, but this is legit.
Yeah. So there's a raid on his home. What is going on? Why? What's the rationale? What are they trying to find through this? What is their end game? I don't know, but
nobody cared enough about that guy they just killed from Al-Qaeda. Now they're trying to distract the things. Go to the next story. It's like, is that not true? It's got to be close, right?
I don't know. I don't want to talk about this. I just wanted to bring it to everybody's attention. This is just absolutely insane what's going on. You want to say anything before I don't want to get
stuff. I don't want to go down that road. We can talk about it in the after show if you want. Like, but if, as far as like this program, no. For what? I don't want to polarize myself more than probably I already have today.
All right, we have Senator Cynthia Lummis, and one of her staffers has revealed that every U.S. crypto exchange is being investigated by the SEC. And the number is more than 40 of U.S. cryptocurrency exchanges that are currently doing business in the United States. And this is according to CoinGecko. And U.S. exchanges have likely received what is called a Wells notices. And this is usually a formally to inform them that companies are going to be undergoing an action that is brought against them. That is most likely an investigation. I suspect if this is true, because this is, seems to be hearsay at this particular moment, because we're getting this through Senator Lummis's staffer. If this is true, this is probably likely to what they're listing and selling on their exchanges. And given what's transpired today with Tornado Cash, I'm wondering what the heck is going on. There may be some real, the wheels are turning, and there may be some a hammer that's going to drop on a lot of these shit coins moving forward. Interesting stuff. I'm not sure if this is true. It seems to be more hearsay right now, but if it is, look out, and hopefully you don't have anything parked in these shit coins or on these exchanges.
I think we talked about this before, Len, that there was a case to be made, you know, a year ago at 69K or 68K Bitcoin, that the risk in trading alts or holding alts as they went up in fiat value in order to sell them for fiat or sell them for Bitcoin, you know, you could make the case, I think, that that was something that was reasonable to do, especially if you're not particularly interested in Bitcoin as a long-term play and you'd rather have the fiat gains. I would get it. I think that time has passed as far as the risk profile, though. Like, you just see this stuff over and over again now. And Coinbase was proactive in sending out a bunch of tweets, I think, last week in between shows, that they are very much on the defensive and trying to get out in front of anyone that says they're dealing in securities on their platform. Again, like, I am at a loss for how anyone with half a brain could think that those things are anything but securities. All those tokens are obviously securities. And Coinbase as a company, you know, we talked before about how they're all these guys that they're involved with are dealing in fractional reserve, and what Pierre Rochard, who's also coming on the program in a few weeks, calls on Stefan Lavera's podcast, you either have real Bitcoin or you have what he calls terms of service Bitcoin, where fuck, you never know, you might, you know, at the end of the day, if something happens, you got to check that TOS to see if that stuff's actually yours. This is going to happen more and more, not just with Bitcoin, but with all these alts as well. And yeah, I think you're right. When it comes to whether or not the wheels of enforcement are turning, seems to me that they are, my friend. Seems to me that they are.
Did you hear about the exchange called HODLNOT? And just came out today. Apparently, well, I'm looking at their Twitter account right now, and the banner shows you could earn up to 7.25 APY in your crypto. So it's another DeFi exchange similar to Voyager. Well, they announced today that, dear users, we regret to inform you that we will be halting withdrawals, token swaps, and deposits immediately due to recent market conditions. We have also withdrawn our MAS license application, and the next big update is happening August 19th. Another rug pull from another exchange that primarily deals with shitcoins. I would never have expected this, but here we are. Be very careful where you keep your digital assets, and if it's not named Bitcoin, be very, very careful. It's I don't think this is a coincidence that this happened at the same time. I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and we'll see once the dust settles what happens. It's going to be fucking nuts.
There's nothing new that is not forgotten, right? Like, it's just the same shit over and over again, and the contagion continues. Does it not? Like, is that really what we're seeing here? Is there exposure? Is there, like, what's the cause? Did it say? Are these guys going to start going on podcasts and saying it was market conditions again?
They only announced market conditions, and more to come August 19th. We're going to have to wait almost 2 weeks before we get any more information. Whatever. What could you say? Not your keys, not your coins. It's been mentioned a few times in the chat as well. Also, I'm not sure if you saw, since we're on this topic, Celsius. Did you see one of their creditors as listed as the World Economic Forum? It's fucking funny.
Is that legit?
Apparently it is. I have the document here, unless somebody fudged it, but they apparently are listed as one of the creditors. It's pretty funny shit if that is the case. I don't know.
Klaus is out there trying to earn 20% on DOT.
Let him get rugged, that motherfucker.
Come on.
Do you hear?
There's no way that's legit.
We could look into this further, but from the videos, sorry, the pictures that I've seen, I don't know. We'll leave it at that. Did you hear about Robinhood? We talked about the economy really taking a downturn, and they announced just this past week they're going to be reducing their headcount by 23%. That's a very large number of people that are going to be losing jobs as a result of just the downturn in the economy. But the one bright spot they have is apparently their digital asset sales. The revenue on that is actually doing quite well. But everything else, Not very good. So Robinhood, man, oh man, 23%, almost 1 in 4 is going to be losing a job over there. That's fucking sad.
You would think some of these scamming companies like Coinbase, Robinhood would start framing this in a more like lib friendly way. Like they could say like we're reducing our carbon footprint by 23% or 8% instead of we're canning a bunch of people and sending them to the, you know, food bank. Yeah, these guys, where's the marketing team, Len? These guys are constantly pushing out emails for shitcoins. Surely these shitcoin copywriters could at least come up with something like that, right? Beats me. If we can do it, why can't they? Robinhood, hire me. Jason Calcanis, get your boy Vlad on the phone and hire me, bro.
Do you want to be associated with those guys?
Listen, I'm a mercenary, buddy. If they want to pay me $100,000 to come up with that strategy, 100%. I can't do the slides. I'm not really graphically inclined, but happy to write the copy.
Well, no, let's move on. I have a story here. Interestingly enough, the Moscow Exchange, they have started trading bonds with the yuan as the settlement, the payment of settlement. And this started on the 3rd of August. They started trading bonds. And it's incredible to see that now they're doing this. And is this a sign of the times? Is this an end to U.S. dollar dominance? Is this part of the new agreement and a new collaboration between the Chinese and the Russians? Very interesting stuff. We're probably going to see a lot more of this moving forward.
This is not really a surprise, is it? You and me have talked about this, like, you know, on our show, other shows. We went on Green Candle not long ago, talked about this sort of thing. The collapse of the empire is here. The question is what's going to happen on the way out for a lot of these countries. And, you know, United States, China, Russia, Germany, another one. Let's see. I mean, these countries are not going to make it past, I don't know, like the next 50 years as the powers they you know, with the power they're enjoying currently. Let's just see what they do on the way out, right? That's the big question. I saw a great tweet today about the demographics in a lot of the countries that are sort of volatile at the moment, and all of them have sort of the same problem, right? We talked about this before. The old folks outnumber, you know, the 80s outnumber the 70s, outnumber the 60s, outnumber the 50s, outnumber the 40s, all the way down to the kids. And that's irreversible damage, right? You know, so we joke about Elon pulling out, but if everyone was more like Elon, we wouldn't have that problem.
We'd have a lot different issues.
I just said that problem. Wouldn't have that problem.
Not to say whatever, but we won't go there. Then the last story I have is about Solana, aka Anal OS. This past week, there was a bunch of wallets that were drained of the Sol token that's native to the Solana network. And totaling, from what I understand, around $8 million have been siphoned out of a whole bunch of people's wallets. What can I say? They're still investigating what is the reason, what happened, why this is the case, and how they can stop this from happening again. You know what? It's funny shit. It's too bad. A lot of people had to lose money in order to learn this very, very tough lesson, but hopefully they become Bitcoiners at the end.
Now, Len, the big problem I have with this SQL Lana hack, and, you know, hacks on Solana in general have been funny, and there's been some other hacks in Ethereum. I think that a lot of people feel like these are like complex, extremely well-organized actors. And I actually have done a little bit of digging into this, and I found a video of the perpetrators of the siphon getting ready to execute their plan. And they're not quite as sophisticated as you would think.
Does one have a gray tan?
I'm gonna play this for you now, and we'll see what you think.
Unleaded blue container, Supreme red container, Diesel in the green. Okay, are we clear here, guys?
Yeah, but how can you tell which is the Supreme?
What are you stupid? You fucking taste. Unleaded tastes a little tangy. Supreme is kind of sour, and Diesel tastes pretty good.
Will you please, for God's sake, stop it, man. Can you do something about your daughter? Please, stop it. Stop
his daughter is his daughter's representative of the SEC in this clip.
Corey, are you going to fight my daughter who's 9 years old? Because you're probably going to get hurt, okay? Stand down and listen to me. Boys, don't fuck this up. I am your boss. You listen to me and you do what I say when I say it. And if you don't, I'll report both of you to Julian and you won't be going on this fucking cruise, okay?
Come on, that's ridiculous, dude.
Corey, shut the fuck up and leave my daughter alone and listen to me. Go to the store, get Julian some rum, and go siphon some fucking gas, all right? Because I got to take Trinity to go get some patches.
How sad is that Corey and Trevor, that they're at the very bottom of the food chain and they have to listen to Ricky? Ricky himself is below the food chain when it comes to Julian. And man, they're at the very, very bottom. That is fucking
shows unbelievable. Anyway, that's what it looks like over at Hacker headquarters for SQL Lana. Listen, man, if you want to keep playing these games with these people, like, go for it. But otherwise, like, just, you know, come watch us every week. Buy Bitcoin, hang on, and have a good time on the way up. That's all.
All right. So that's it for the news. As for a Bitcoiner and no coiner, similar to last week, I have a no coiner, but no Bitcoiner. How about you, Joey?
I was just going to point out that the, you know, for my no coiner, this whole media complex, Bankless, WSJ, a few other people. Yeah. Oh, obviously sponsored by our friends at Tahini's, where no matter what the price of Bitcoin is at Tahini's, it's always a bull market. Let me just pull up the Tahini's logo here for those on video. Can't really see it. We're working on that. We haven't been in touch with their graphics department. I got this graphic from Google last week in the middle of the show. So
they opened up a store in Brantford, and I think that's their 15th location, if I'm not mistaken, in Southern Ontario. Just opened up this past weekend. Check them out. Somebody in the chat just mentioned that they popped their cherry for Tahini's and purchased their first meal over there. So we're making people believers and buying meals from Tahini's. Ali's a great Bitcoiner. He's put more Bitcoin on his balance sheet last week. So I'm not sure what else to say aside from eat Tahini's or else you're going to be a no-coiner. So Joey, go ahead with your no-coiner.
I don't have one. I already gave my rant. It was the blue check media, financial media, misreporting on Saylor and doing everything they can to paint Bitcoin in a negative light, given the runaway inflation we've seen and Bitcoin price not quite responding as you know, I think the uneducated masses would have predicted that we wanted it to. Of course, I always want number go up, but I'm not so short-sighted that I can't see the writing on the wall. The biggest thing that's going to affect the Bitcoin price, you know, as well as the fundamentals of the token, obviously, is governments can't seem to get out of their own way. So I just don't see any way but up from this thing. Preston Byrne, when we had him on last week, also made a good point that I almost clipped for Reddit, but we ended up going with the shows is in action and shows is in possession clip instead. That the law of exponentials is only going one way for Bitcoin. And, you know, I think honestly, crypto more broadly as well is going to be a lot more people in the space, regardless of what you think about those other tokens. They're going to get adopted, at least in the interim, because there's just so many people who are going to not only know about it, but hold it and use it as time goes on, short of a complete ban, which we've talked about being sort of an admission of defeat. I don't see it going any way but up. So to the blue check media, you know, HFSP, I guess, NGMI and FUCKYOU as well. So that's
what we give them.
Take care. Go ahead. I don't know. I really should edit that out. That was probably too vulgar. My dad's going to be mad about that.
Well, for my no coiner, I'm going to go with a lady by the name of Michelle Ranieri. And I came across her through an article that was written, and Jessica Dickler was the author for the article. So I'm not going to use her as the no coiner, since she's simply just writing something about what somebody else said. And essentially the article, what piqued my interest was the title, and it says use of credit cards, personal loan surges, but it's not a red flag, according to an expert. And Michelle Ranieri is said expert. And she's the vice president of U.S. research and consulting for TransUnion. Maybe she's got we got to talk about her job and her title and the people she works for, because she's not delivering the goods. She's saying, I'm not seeing anything that I would declare as a red flag. And this is with regards to a lot of credit cards being issued in the last few months. As the number of credit card accounts in the U.S. rises, more new customers are subprime borrowers, generally meaning those with a credit score of 600 or below, according to TransUnion, in part because of the flood of younger borrowers gaining access to credit cards. And at the same time, delinquencies are ticking up and approaching what they were before the pandemic, said Ranieri. But that does not necessarily mean it's bad. The strongest indicator of whether somebody can pay their bills or not is whether they have a job. And she's saying, as long as people have jobs, they have ways to figure out to get to the end of the day and pay their bills. Clearly, she's a fucking no-coiner here. People that are getting credit card, according to this article, are people that have very low credit scores. They probably don't have the capital built up should they default that they're going to have to fall back on. It's simply going to be default, and the company itself that issued the credit is going to be holding the bag in the end. Also, they don't have a lot of history where they understand what it's like to pay bills, what are the consequences for not paying bills. These are the people that are most likely to default. These are the people that shouldn't be getting credit cards en masse and cheering them, saying this is great news, especially because the job numbers are going up. We talked about the job numbers going up, and a lot of this is part-time jobs and second jobs. Again, this is not indicative of an economy doing well. I can't believe somebody that is a so-called expert is able to say, look at all this data and come to the conclusion that things are rosy and it's nothing to be concerned about. There's no red flag. What the fuck do you have to see that considers a red flag? Do you want to see houses on fire to say, oh, fuck, finally this is shit? No, you understand when you start smelling smoke, there's fucking fire behind it. Not when you see it. Clearly, she's a no-quitter, has no idea what the fuck is going on in the economy, has no idea what's going on. This is her fucking, the shit that she knows about. She knows about, or should know about, credit scores, credit cards, and all this. Joey, we're fucking a couple of guys in the basement, and we could fucking read the tea leaves here. Why can't she? So that's why, Michelle Ranieri, you are my no coiner of the week. You have no fucking clue.
Incredible. Incredible. The clueless march continues on the no coiner of the week segment on the CBP. Yeah, that's all we got for tonight, I guess. Another short summertime rip, which I continue to enjoy. Do you want to talk about giveaway or no?
Yeah, we should have talked that at the.
Let's talk about it. Let's. I'll tell you what. Why don't we do it after the show for the YouTube chat faithful? I think we kind of wanted to do that for at least some of it, right? You want to do that now, or you want to do it after the audio? I think it's good now
because it may be applicable for people that may want it that are listening in. We don't want to totally exclude them. I think we should.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. Yeah. That, good point. Okay. So we. Are going to give away some absolutely blazing hot, very exclusive CBP Shake Pay collab t-shirts in the next, I don't know, couple weeks. I think we're getting like 25 shirts. We're not going to give them all away at once. We'll give them all away over the course of a couple weeks. I think the first week we give them away, the contest will be, you have to be in the live chat. So you have to have made it this far on the show, right? If you're audio or video. And I think the first contest will be, it probably won't be on Twitter, the first one. So I'll say that. It's just going to be, I think, in the chat that day. So keep coming to the chat. Yeah, I think it'll be, you got to be here and you got to tweet me something to do with your ShakePay app engagement. It's either going to be the streak or like sats back for the month or something, or like how your Shake Squad did, or like maybe how many purchases you made that week with screenshots. I don't know. I got to think about what it's going to be.
Have yet to be determined. So
yeah, TBD.
So it's something that's going to be associated with ShakePay, obviously, because these shirts are combination ShakePay CBP shirts. So they're dynamite. There's a select number of them. So once we run out of them, there's no more to come around. This is it.
That's right.
So stay tuned for that. Hopefully that there's going to be a lot of people vying for it. If not, if there's a small number of people, you have an increased odds of getting it. So, yeah, there we go. And family of the CBP are excluded from participating. Just want to put that out there. So,
Max, are you excluding your wife?
She's excluded. Excluded. Okay.
Excluded I guess I'll exclude mine too. Are you keeping a shirt? We got to keep a shirt, right?
We'll have to figure this out.
I feel like we got to keep a shirt. Like, I can't give away all those shirts. They're fucking Szechuan. They're so heat.
I'd love. Yeah, we'll keep a shirt. How's that?
You okay? Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So price of Bitcoin to close here. I have no idea. My blog's not showing it. Let me look. This is what you come to the stream for. $23,838 in U.S. dollars. What about Canuck bucks?
In Canadian dollars, it's $30,635. Did we have a very, very slight show pump today? Either way, it's stagnant. At the very least, it didn't go up or down that much.
It's not 30K. Wake me up at 30K. We can start talking about what's next, I think. Exactly.
Not Canadian, not Mexican pesos. No, they want US dollars.
So. That's right. Anyway, God bless you. Thanks for coming, everybody. We're going to do the after show now, maybe 10, 15 minutes. And our first topic, I think, Len, is good from Yochi. We'll talk about it right after. And if you're not on YouTube, come over to YouTube and watch the last 10 or 15 with us. You'll enjoy it, I promise.
Take care.